Good morning.
Good morning.
So glad to have you all here on this 4th of July weekend. I hope the weather family cooperates with us and you can have barbecue and baseball and fireworks in your future. Thanks, Andrea, for that wonderful reading. That was probably the shortest Bible passage ever read to you on a Sunday morning. But it is most fitting for such a time as this. It is Jesus speaking to his disciples as he's trying to explain to them that he's not going to be with them much longer. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. Peace, what does that word mean? Most would say freedom from war or freedom from worry. And yes, those definitions are part of it. The Greek word, irene, that is translated as peace, means quietness and rest. The peace that Jesus is offering is still a bit different. Long ago, a rich man sought the perfect painting of peace. Not finding one that he thought was satisfactory, he announced a contest to produce this masterpiece. The challenge stirred the imaginations of artists from far and wide, and paintings started pouring in. Finally, the great day appeared, and the judges uncovered one peaceful scene after another, while the viewers clapped and cheered. The tensions grew. There were only two paintings left, and as the judge pulled the cover off of one of them, a hush fell over the crowd. It was a mirror lake reflecting a leafy green birch under the soft blush of the evening sky. Along the grassy shore, a flock of sheep grazed undisturbed. Surely, this was the winner. Then the rich man uncovered the second painting himself, and the crowd gasped in surprise. This couldn't represent peace, they mumbled. It was a roaring waterfall cascading down a rocky cliff. The crowd could almost feel its penetrating cold spray. Stormy gray clouds threatened to explode with lightning and wind and thunder. In the midst of the thundering noises and bitter chill, a skinny tree clung to the rocks at the edge of the falls. One of its branches reached out in front of the rushing waters as if to foolishly experience its full power. But look, a little bird has built a nest in the elbow of that branch. Content and undisturbed in her stormy surroundings, she rested on her eggs in perfect peace. This is the peace Jesus offers us, because peace does not mean being in a place where there's no noise, no trouble, no hard work. Peace being in the middle means being in the middle of all these things and still be calm in your heart. The world around you is in turmoil, but your spirit is quiet and at rest. Are you at peace? In this crazy world, I'm sure there is something that will upset you and worry you. Even if we put aside the troubles of the world, the mass shootings, the racism, the collective xenophobia, just to name a few of the world's troubles, there is still enough going on in our personal lives that we find peace to be elusive. Job losses, relationship issues, illness, death. So how can we find that pursuit of peace that surpasses all understanding? How can we ride out the storm calmly and serenely? Let us pray. God, we are anxious and fearful. The world seems to have gone mad, and our personal lives are not that hot either. We need to find peace in the chaos. Help us. Amen. Let's look at the disciples. They have been with Jesus for about 3 years. They saw him heal the blind. They saw him raise Lazarus from the dead. They saw him heal lepers. They saw him feed the 5,000. He was a miracle worker, and they thought he would be with them for many years. When the woman anointed him with the expensive perfume at dinner, he said, "She did it in preparation for my burial." It went right over their heads. They believed him to be the Messiah, the one they had been waiting for, the one who would lead them from under the oppression of Rome. And now he's talking about leaving them. He says he's going to a place where they cannot go. They must have been a little confused. Did I just follow this man for 3 years and now he's going to simply leave? They must have been a little afraid. What now? We've made the Pharisees and the Sadducees mad, and he's just going to leave us to face the music? But Jesus said, don't worry. I'm going to leave my peace with you. Don't let your hearts be troubled, and don't be afraid. I find it interesting that Jesus juxtaposed giving us peace with the command to not let our hearts be troubled. That sounds like we can control whether or not our hearts are troubled. I believe we can control whether or not we worry, and today I want to talk about how. What we need and what we are all looking for is inner peace. And one way to find inner peace is to live in the now, the present, this moment. If you are too busy holding on to the past or chasing the future, it's hard to see the person you are now. The past is just the past, long gone and passed by. It is not to be forgotten because lessons have been learned, but we are not to let it shape our every thought and our every action. We live in the past by holding on to grudges and resentments. Your sister did something to you 5 years ago, and you have not spoken to her since. You have nieces and nephews you have never even seen. You don't go to family functions because you're afraid she might be there. You are punishing yourself far more than you are punishing your sister. It's in the past. Let it go. That resentment and anger you're feeling is only eating your insides away. A wise man was sitting with a group of people and told a joke. Everybody laughed like crazy. A few minutes later, he told the same joke. Some people laughed. He told the same joke over and over again until nobody laughed. And then he smiled and said, "You can't laugh at the same joke over and over again. So why are you crying over the same thing again and again?" We beat ourselves up with our past. Let it go. You can't change it. And it's only affecting you. Another reason we live in the past is because it's familiar. We know what's happened and it's safe. Think of the middle-aged guy who still talks about his glory days of being a college football star. Or the mom with three kids who constantly talks about when she was a cheerleader. These are not bad things or hurtful things to remember, but they keep you from living in the present. It keeps you from enjoying this moment in time. While some people live in the past because they don't want to deal with the present, others live in the past for fear of what may come in the future. The future is filled with uncertainty. What will happen to us? What will happen to our family, to our career? And one of the scariest things to contemplate about the future is, what if our best days are behind us? What if nothing in the future will ever be as good as what has happened in the past? I'll start living and enjoy life when I get married, or when I get a promotion at work, or when the kids are out of the house. And then there are the dreaded what ifs. What if I lose my job? What if my spouse leaves me? What if I die before I wake? These thoughts keep us from living in the here and now. We keep waiting for that special moment to do something, or we worry about what will happen if, and life has passed us by. Wayne Dyer, the motivational speaker, says, "You do indeed have a past, but not now. And yes, you have a future, but not now. You can consume yourself with thoughts of then and maybe, and that will keep you from the inner peace you could be experiencing." In February of 1980, the U.S. Olympic hockey team walked away with a gold medal at Lake Placid, New York. You remember that? It was a long shot, but those young athletes shocked the world by upsetting the powerful Russian team. And then they grabbed the championship from Finland while the crowd chanted, USA, USA. Before his team's victory over the Soviet Union, the coach of the U.S. hockey team told his players, you are born to be a player. You are meant to be here at this time. This is your moment. You. Everyone in this room was meant to be here at this time. This is your moment. Don't waste it worrying about the past or fretting about the future. Enjoy today. But how do I do that, you may ask? Well, I've got an answer. Mindfulness. Mindfulness is paying close attention on purpose to the things that you are doing. And here are some easy steps. Do one thing at a time. I know that this is a multitask culture, and sometimes you have to take notes while you're on the phone, or listen to an audiobook while you're driving, or feed the baby while cooking dinner. But don't multitask all the time. Be mindful of what you're doing. When you're pouring water, just pour water. When you're taking a bath, just bathe. When you're eating, just eat. The next time you have a peach, for example, look at its coloring. Feel its fuzziness. When you wash it, feel it. But notice how it feels different after that. Smell it deeply, then bite it. Is it juicy? Is it sweet? What about the texture? Is it firm? Is it soft? Then take another bite. That's living in the now, enjoying what you're doing at the moment. And then do that one thing that you're doing slowly and deliberately. Take your time and move slowly. Make your actions deliberate, not rushed and random. You want to enjoy that peach. You want to savor the full essence that is the peach. It takes practice, but it helps you to focus on the task, and it helps you to stay in the now. This might sound silly, but forcing yourself to physically move more slowly is an easy way to flex your willpower muscles. Research suggests that willpower can be actively strengthened by doing things more slowly and in different ways than you're used to doing them. For example, brushing your teeth with your non-dominant hand actually boosts willpower over time. Observe yourself in this moment with mindful awareness. Whatever you are doing, slow it down by at least 25%. If you are hurriedly reading, slow down. Is your knee bouncing up and down? Bring your awareness to it and allow it to calm down. If you are tapping your fingers on the table, notice this and allow them to relax. Physically, slow yourself down and allow your thoughts and emotions to slow down as well. Spend at least 5 minutes each day doing nothing. This is the one I like. Just sit in silence. Become aware of your thoughts. Focus on your breathing. Focusing on your breathing has a calming effect. Breathe in deeply through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Try it with me. You can feel its calming effect. Become comfortable with the silence and stillness. It'll do you a world of good, and it takes only 5 minutes. Focus on what you're doing right now. Enjoy this present moment, even if it's listening to me, which reminds me of this cartoon. I want to learn to live in the moment, just not this moment, some other moment, like a moment on the beach. And remember this, God was not absent in your past. We may not be able to see what God was up to, and to be honest, God might not have been doing what we wanted done, but God was there, and God is still working on our behalf. I can't promise you that everything is going to work out the way you want. I can't even tell you that it's going to be a happily ever after, but I can promise that God will be in it, and with God, we can let go of the past and face the what-ifs of the future with confidence. A young boy was driving a tractor pulling a wagon load of hay down the road when the wagon fell over in front of a farmer's house. The farmer rushed out and saw the young boy crying and said, "Son, don't worry about this. We can fix it. But dinner is ready right now. Why don't you come in and eat with us? And then I'll come out and help you with the wagon." The boy said, "No, I can't. My father is going to be very angry with me." The farmer said, "Now, don't worry. Just come in and have some dinner, and you'll feel better." The boy said, "I'm just afraid my father is really going to be angry with me." The farmer and the young boy went in the house, had dinner, and afterwards they walked outside to the wagon, and the farmer said, "Now, don't you feel better after that great meal?" The boy said, "Yes, but I know my father is going to be very angry with me." The farmer said, "Nonsense, where's your father anyway?" The boy said, "Under the wagon." Which brings us to our second rung on inner peace. Prioritize. You know what a reactive day looks like. You arrive at work in the morning with no clear idea of the day's activities. Then things begin to happen. The mail arrives, the phone rings, people drop by, someone asks you to do them a favor, someone else asks you to help them with the project. With the flurry of activity, you respond to all these demands. You have a million things to do and each needing your personal attention. You put forth a lot of effort, but at the end of the day, you haven't accomplished much. This approach is often referred to as firefighting or being up to your neck in alligators. If you don't make plans, you will experience a decision dilemma. What am I going to do next? If you don't determine what you want to achieve, others will be more than happy to fill up your time for you. A group of friends went deer hunting and paired off in twos for the day. That night, one of the hunters came home alone, staggering under the weight of an 8-point buck. "Where's Harry?" he was asked. "Oh, Harry had a stroke of some kind. He's back up the trail about a mile and a half." "You left Harry laying there and carried the deer back?" He said, "Well, I didn't think anybody would steal Harry." Prioritizing. You must prioritize, putting things in order of importance. But then there's this story about two NFL coaches. A certain head coach divorced his wife after 26 years. This was after he left college football coaching and became head coach in the National Football League. He said he needed a wife in college because of social functions and because he wanted to show families that he would take care of their sons. In pro football, however, she was an unnecessary distraction to winning. He said winning football was his number one priority and his two sons second. In contrast to this, Tom Landry said, "The thrill of knowing Jesus is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I think God has put me in a very special place, and he expects me to use it to his glory. I do whatever I do, whether coaching, football, or talking to the press, I'm always a Christian. Christ is first, family second, and football third." Who do you think had their priorities straight? How easy it is to get caught up in winning and losing, making more and more money, having the biggest house and the most expensive car. And while we are trying to obtain these things, we put our families and God on the back burner. But don't wait to start prioritizing after you get to work. You should start before you leave home. Prayer should always be at the top of your list. You say, "I can't afford the time to pray in the morning." I say, you can't afford not to. And I'm preaching to myself here. You'll be surprised how your day will go if you started with prayer. Besides, Jesus did it. And rising very early in the morning, while it was still dark, he departed and went to a desolate place, and there he prayed alone. Jesus had a really good ministry going. He was into public speaking, healing, teaching, training. He was a crowd magnet, attracting diverse groups of people wherever he went. One thing to be noted, though, is that he prayed every day. If you want your day to be productive, start it with prayer. Pray and prioritize. Take a moment, say a prayer before you leave home, and then put your to-do list in order of importance. For example, you may want to get your father from under the wagon before you have dinner. Lastly, love and accept yourself. Inner peace can be found when you're happy with you. Before you can love others, you must have a healthy sense of self-love. If you don't love yourself and accept yourself for how you were created, then there's little hope that you will love and accept your creator, let alone be able to unconditionally love anybody else. Jesus said there were two great commandments, and these two commandments encompassed all the others. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And you must love your neighbor as yourself. I think we have trouble loving our neighbor as we love ourselves because we don't love ourselves. Accepting yourself and loving yourself are not acts of selfishness or narcissism. I believe it is a requirement for a successful and peaceful life. Many things prevent us from becoming who we really are. There are lots of things that cripple us and stop us from reaching our maximum potential. And one of those is comparing yourself to others. You have to understand that you are uniquely you, and because of that, you are special. No one can do you as well as you can. Besides, if you compare yourself with others, you can always find someone that's better, which gives you a sense of inadequacy, or someone that's worse that can give you a sense of pride. If only I could sing as well as Joan, I would be in the choir. If I could speak as well as Bob, I would do better on my job. Why does Evelyn always seem to catch a break and I never can? It's easy to see why Paul said what he did. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they do not show good sense. Outward appearances can be deceiving. Everyone has their own issues and insecurities, even though they are well hidden. Instead of comparing yourself to others, embrace your individuality. Your uniqueness is what makes you special. Stop replaying or reliving old tapes. The things our parents said to us, the things our teachers said to us, our pastors, our coaches, still live in our heads. Victor was told by his teacher that he was a dunce, that he was too dumb to learn, and the best thing he could do was drop out of school and perhaps find a trade that he could support himself with. And so he dropped out of school, and for the next 15 years, he had 101 different jobs and was not successful at any one of them because every morning he got up and dressed a dunce. He shaved a dunce and went to work as a dunce and collected the pay of a dunce. He continued to play the same tape over and over in his head. At 31 years of age, one of his jobs gave him an evaluation and discovered that he had an IQ of 161. From that point on, he got up in the morning, he dressed a genius, he shaved a genius, he went to work as a genius, he got paid as a genius. That old tape finally got erased and he could see himself as he really was. What old tape are you playing? You'll never amount to anything. You know you're going to hell, don't you? You're stupid. I don't know how I ever got stuck with a child like you. Why did I ever have you? You're such a disappointment. These are all lies, and you have to see them as lies, even though they come from a beloved parent, pastor, coach. Let me give you another tape to play. You are something special. Not one in a million, but one in 7 billion. You are unique. You're one of a kind. You have a thumbprint that nobody has else on the face of this earth. You've got a voice print unlike anybody. You are a wonderful somebody on your way to becoming what God intended you to be. You make me smile whenever I see you, and I love your hugs. Oh, and by the way, God loves you as if you were the only person God has to love. You are God's favorite. Well, next to me, of course, Michael. You must accept yourself. You have strengths and you have weaknesses. Every one of us is imperfect. We all have imperfections, weaknesses, and flaws. You must accept that. You will make mistakes, and you have made mistakes. You will be misunderstood, and you will misunderstand others. You will mess up. But when you mess up, admit it. Accept it. Forgive it. Straighten it out as best you can, and then move on. It's a part of life. And by the same token, when you receive compliments, accept them graciously. Don't downplay them. Don't say, oh, no, not me. As Marianne Williamson said, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. So stop putting yourself down. We are our own worst critics. Putting yourself down can be harmful to your self-esteem and self-confidence. That includes the words you say out loud and those inner talks you have with yourself. I'm sure we do it as a defense mechanism. I'll say it before someone else does. But these words and thoughts shape who we are. If you think you can't do something, guess what? You can't. If you think you're unattractive, you probably will be, as you may not care about what you wear or how you wear your hair. You can't control what others say about you, but you can control what you say about yourself. To build your self-esteem, it's important to talk about yourself in a healthy manner. Believe you are worthy and stop bullying yourself. Treat yourself the same way you would treat your best friend. Be aware of and pay attention to the negative thoughts and words you have about yourself, and then stop it. We seem to have a double standard. We treat others so much better than we treat ourselves. Quit the self-bullying and talk about yourself in a positive way. That doesn't mean being cocky or braggy or overly confident. In fact, take a lesson from little Jessica. Can do anything better than anyone else, even have inner peace. It's your choice. Inner peace can't be given to you by others. Your spouse can't give it to you. Your children can't give it to you. You have to give it to yourself. It takes practice, but it's well worth the trouble. Amen.